Hi everyone, I'm Israel Smith and this is Illuminating Lives. Welcome back, dear listener, to another episode of the Illuminating Lives podcast. It's Israel here and I have been working on some really, really interesting stuff for a corporate workshop and also working with some clients, and some recurring themes are coming up, particularly the topic of feeling safe, especially feeling safe in a chaotic world. And I want to go into a bit about this because I think it'll be really useful for you. I think it will be the kind of thing that you can give a bit of reflection on in your own life and hopefully bring more of that feeling safe, regardless of external circumstances, into your life. So let's dig in. First of all, as I tend to in these sorts of situations, let's bring a few definitions to the table. So first of all, let's define what I mean by safe. So to me, and this is assisted by our good friends at Merriam-Webster.com, safe is feeling free from harm or risk, secure from threat of danger, harm, or loss. It is, I guess, being away from any controversy, any threat, any difficulty, any danger. It's all that kind of stuff, right? So that's what I mean by safe. Now, feeling safe also implies to me a sense of emotional safety, a sense that our emotions are not spiked. We are able to feel safe, feel at peace. At a kind of a physiological level, biological level, what I'm talking about there as well is not being in fight or flight, not being in our really heightened, oh my God, there's a saber-toothed tiger kind of space, but instead feeling like we're in our parasympathetic, we're in our rest, relax, digest, you know, we're in that kind of space where we're actually able to process life, be resilient in the face of challenges, but feel like we're calm and we're rational, and we have everything that we need. To me, that's a kind of a holistic view of what feeling safe means. Now, on to the next bit. What does chaotic mean? Well, in one of those really helpful terms, it says marked by chaos or being in a state of chaos. Okay, great. That's really not very helpful. Thank you. So, digging a little deeper, first of all, it says completely confused or disordered. And, I guess the thing about chaos in mathematical terms also kind of applies to the world. It says in a mathematical situation, having outcomes that can vary widely due to extremely small changes in initial conditions. If I go into chaos a little further, the confused, unorganized state, the inherent unpredictability in the behavior of a complex natural system, you know, all of these things. So when I think about the examples it gives are the atmosphere, boiling water, or the beating heart. So there's inherent unpredictability in behavior because of complex systems. Humans are complex systems. The world, our society, our companies, our economy, our interactions socially, all of these things are complex systems and prone to chaos. It doesn't mean there's no order anywhere, but it means that there are large chunks of unpredictability. I think that's the key, right? It's kind of like what we've seen over the last couple of years has stripped away any illusions that we might have had that the world is predictable and that things are certain, that things are going to continue indefinitely as they have always been. The fact is they're not. The only certainty we've had is that one day we're going to leave the planet, we're going to die. But we've had these illusions of certainty. So, you know, the world is inherently chaotic. One of the beautiful things I love about humans is that we try and bring order to chaos. We try and mow the lawns and keep our garden in a state of neat orderliness when really life is chaos. So leaves will fall, grass will grow at different rates, animals will do things, plants and trees will sort of move and stretch around the place, but yet we continue pursuing that order out of chaos. That's basically what gardening is, right? So, feeling safe in a chaotic world, feeling like we don't have to encounter risk, feeling that we are free from harm and uncertainty in an unpredictable environment seems a little counterintuitive, seems a little unlikely, right? What I've discovered in my own personal experience, and as always, I'm speaking from my own personal experience, we can do things to help ourselves feel more safe and to feel, in fact, completely safe, regardless of our external circumstances. We can feel like we have the resourcefulness in ourselves. We have the resilience, we have the peace, we have the calm, we have all of these things internally, regardless of what happens externally. And that, to me, is the game plan. That's the aim, so that we can show up powerfully in our lives, regardless of what happens outside in the world, regardless of what happens in our external interactions, regardless of whether our ideas and our projects come to fruition, whether we succeed or fail. No matter what, we will be able to live, thrive, be at peace, content, satisfied, happy, if you will, through feeling safe in this chaotic world. Now, here's the bigger question. Why has this even come up? Well, one of the reasons is because I've just recently completed some project management training. And a gorgeous part of that is about what do teams need to thrive and to perform well. And one of the things they need is a term called psychological safety. So I wanted to just touch on that briefly, right? Psychological safety is, according to Wikipedia and a number of other studies and you know, smart people's publications, it's the ability to show and employ oneself without fear of negative consequences of self-image, status, or career. So let me throw that into plain language for you. My belief, my interpretation of psychological safety, it is our ability to show up as ourselves, to not cut the corners off, to not try and fit round pegs into square holes, but to be the round peg in a room full of square holes, to be ourselves fully and unapologetically, regardless of, well, free from, I suppose, any threat to job, to reputation, or to how we are perceived, right? So it's an environment, psychological safety is an environment where everyone is free to show up, everyone is free to learn, grow, put ideas forward, make mistakes. But it really is about, and especially off the back of this project management training, it's about being able to be transparent, being able to be honest, being able to bring all of our best skills and traits, being able to make mistakes, not being blamed, but instead being curious and being kind of nurtured in a way that we can bring more and more of ourselves. Because honestly, the best of humanity does not come from a fearful environment, right? I mentioned fight or flight earlier. When we are in fight or flight, biologically, our reasoning, logical, rational brain is shut down. We can't learn, we can't be creative, we can't grow, we can't interpret, we can't be logical, we can't make informed and well-balanced choices when we are stuck in fight or flight. So we need to get out of fight or flight mode. We need to find ourselves some space to be safe, to feel like there's, you know, bumpers on the bowling alley, that if we kind of go too far away from middle, we're not going to fall off a cliff. So I guess that's what I mean by, well, that's I suppose where this has come from. But what I've discovered is that psychological safety has massive applications in corporate, but it also, I believe, has massive applications in our own personal lives as individuals, in our families, in our communities, in all of our different groups where we move and interact in the world. Let me take it a little further. Have you ever felt like you're walking on eggshells around somebody? Have you ever felt like with maybe a school teacher or with a boss or a colleague or a intimate partner, like you've been unable to talk about certain things and you were always tiptoeing around, you know, metaphorically, because you were uncertain of when the next explosion would happen, when the next blow up might happen, when the teacher might scream at you, when you might get yelled at for doing something seemingly wrong, right? Like, not a pleasant environment to be in. Massively emotionally, mentally, physically draining. Like, it's the kind of thing that just sucks the energy and the life right out of you. And in that situation, we're constantly on. We're feeling like we're constantly assessing for threats. We're in that hypervigilant sort of state. Now, As I've said, much smarter people than me have written and spoken with all sorts of peer-reviewed, studied evidence about this kind of stuff. Dr. Nicole LePera wrote an amazing book called How to Do the Work, where she touches on this sense of hypervigilance and how that kind of environment as a child can lead to hypervigilance as an adult and can lead to us being constantly on high alert, constantly jittery, fragile, walking on eggshells around life, afraid of being anything less than perfect, afraid of being judged, all this sort of stuff. Imagine in your mind, maybe it's actually true for you in your life, imagine the cost of that over the long term to you. Imagine what that's doing to your body, to be constantly dialed up on adrenaline and, you know, all the other kind of high alert chemicals and hormones and drugs in our body. Imagine the stress that that's placing on your systems. Imagine the stress that's placing on your mind. It's probably the kind of thing that would impact sleep. It would impact your ability to derive nutrition from the food you're eating because your system would always be kind of a bit not quite operating or thriving optimally. It would probably be impacting your immune function, so you'd be more likely to get sick. You know, it's like, what would life be like if you were living in a constant state of fear? That's kind of what we're talking about, right? That's the part about this that is so important to me, that this is something we can all bring awareness to in our own lives, and we can start to see the impact that has in our life and then start to unpick this and cultivate more safety for ourselves despite the chaos of the world, despite uncertainty and unpredictability. So let's start working on the solutions. We've just sort of spent a fair bit of time defining, identifying, explaining what psychological safety looks and feels like, and then what the opposite of psychological safety looks and feels like. So hopefully that's quite clear. How do we cultivate this? How do we build a sense of safety for ourselves and others? Well, in my opinion, in fact, what I really know to be true is we can't do more for others than we do for ourselves. So, you know, it's often said that we can't love another person fully if we don't love ourselves fully. In the same way, we can't show up as patient, compassionate, kind for other people if we don't show patience, compassion, and kindness to ourselves. So, my firm belief here is that creating safety for ourselves starts with ourselves, starts with how do we cultivate safety? How do we help ourselves feel calm, at peace, out of that hyper-alert, hyper-vigilant, threat-assessed kind of state so that we can start to bring more of our creativity to bear, so we can start to feel more comfort and satisfaction and calm and peace in our days? How do we do that? Well, there's a few simple ways that I've personally found that can massively help this. The first one is our breath. When we are hypervigilant on full threat alert, we tend to breathe really shallow into the top half of our lungs, into our chest, very high up, rather than really deep into our diaphragm and into our belly. We tend to breathe fast, rapidly. We tend to breathe through our mouth. Right, and I've just completed a yoga breath coach training, which has taught me that one of the jobs of breathing through our nose is to filter impurities and to add moisture to our breath. But another job of breathing through our nose is to signal safety to our body. Because when we're sprinting away from that really terrifying threat, we're at like full run and our breath is fast and shallow and through our mouth. We tend to be, you know, panting, right? Instead, if we breathe slowly, mindfully, deeply, and a great way to do this, if you'll do it with me just while you listen, is just put one or both hands just onto your belly, just below your ribs, just sort of, you know, around where your belly button is, maybe a little higher. And then as you breathe, close your mouth and breathe slowly, for the count of four, in through your nose, in one, two, three, four, and then out for four, four, three, two, one. Do that a couple of times and concentrate on your hand moving as you breathe. Concentrate on breathing deeply into your belly and slowing the rate down and bringing a physical sense, breathing in through the nose and out through the nose, a physical sense of safety to our body. It's like a little biological cue. Our body goes, oh, I have enough time to breathe through my nose and to breathe slowly. There mustn't be any imminent threats. So it actually helps us disengage our fight or flight mode and re-engage our rest, digest, and relax mode. Okay, so that's something that is really important as a practice. If you are feeling unsafe or jittery or on threat alert, that's a great way to bring yourself back. And honestly, the slower and longer you can make your inhale, and especially the slower and longer you can make your exhale, the more calm you will begin to feel more quickly. So if you do 3 rounds, 5 rounds, 10, 20 rounds, if you set aside a 5-minute timer and just do that for 5 minutes, man, that'll bring you back down into your body. Which brings me to another piece. Most of the time, and I mean the vast majority of the time in our modern, contemporary, civilized Western society, we're never in mortal peril. We are never in danger of losing our life. We just aren't. Our world is really, really safe, no matter what the media will tell you and how much fear they pump into us to try and, you know, keep us consuming and watching their articles or videos. But our bodies can't tell the difference between real and imagined threats. So if we're constantly in our mind spinning out into the future about, oh, this might happen, and what if we lose money, and what if the interest rates go up, and what if a recession hits, and what if my business doesn't make any sales next month, or what if we get sick, or blah, 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 blah. All these what ifs are all future casting. They're all throwing you out into an uncertain and unknowable future. What if instead you were able to bring your attention back to the present moment? Be mindful right here, right now. In, as I've said a couple of times, the vast majority of situations, if you're listening to this podcast on a device of some sort, on a, you know, a mobile phone, a tablet, a computer, then you're already richer than the vast majority of the world's population. There's a very, very high chance that you are safe, well-fed, and have somewhere to sleep. All right, if we think about our primal fundamental needs, we need food, we need shelter, ideally some clothing. And if we've got those things, maybe some money as well, and then we can feel really, really safe. Sure, we might not have as much money as we want. We might have some bills that are coming due. We might have some other things causing challenges in our life. We may have slept rough. We may have, you know, not as much food as we would like. But I would encourage you to think that the vast majority of the time in your life you spend in the present moment, you are safe in that present moment. I am safe in this present moment. Right here, right now, I have everything I need. I'm not at risk of losing my life. I'm not at risk of being evicted. I'm not at risk of, you know, running out of food. And by being mindful and being really present to that, we can begin to be grateful for that. And when we can be grateful for that, we can start to boost our feelings of abundance, our feelings of safety. Look, a lot of this stuff overlaps really, really heavily with what I did in my Thrive series. I'm going to link to those episodes in the show notes on the website, but if you want, you can just scroll back and start with the episode called Thriving Through 2022. It was published right at the start of this year, and I did a series of about 10 episodes all about my Thrive List, my sort of methodology about feeling like we can thrive. And it's about cultivating that exact sense of inner stability, safety, peace, calm that we can take into our lives. Let's get back to basics. How do we then cultivate that in our family? How do we then cultivate that feeling of psychological safety in our communities and in our workplaces? It comes down to me to this question of what environment am I contributing to or am I creating? What role of leadership am I playing in my family, in my workplace, in my community? And I've got a few things that I've looked up, which I think are really, really powerful that I'm going to read through and just use. So there's this beautiful website called the Center for Creative Leadership, ccl.org. I will link to this article in the show notes also. It's got a really great five-step process, five ways to help create psychological safety. I challenge you to reflect or read through this, listen to this, with reference to not just the workplace, but your family and your community groups. So here are five tips for leaders. If we begin to reflect on ourselves as leaders in our family, in our communities, in our own lives, here are five tips on how we can create a more psychologically safe environment, which will help to have us feel more resilient, more capable in our chaotic and unpredictable world. Okay, step number one, make psychological safety an explicit priority, right? So this is about raising it. I want this to be a safe environment. I want us to feel safe. And I want to create a space where we can all be fully ourselves, express ourselves without fear of retribution, without fear of what happens next, of getting yelled at or walking on eggshells, right? Now, this may take some time to cultivate, but by raising it as a starting point, bringing everyone's awareness to that in work or in family or in community groups, right? This is across the board. This is a great starting place. Okay. Step number two, facilitate everyone speaking up. Now, let me read you some more from this page. Show genuine curiosity and empathy. Honor candor and truth-telling. Be open-minded, compassionate, and willing to listen when someone is brave enough to say something that challenges the status quo. And if possible, embrace a coaching culture. Right, this is massive. Giving everyone the time and the space to be heard, to express themselves fully, and to welcome that in a non-judgmental, open-minded way that demonstrates compassion and empathy. And we spoke a lot about that in my last episode about what is the difference between compassion and empathy. That is going to give everyone the sense that they have a right to speak. They're welcome to speak. Number three, establish norms for how failure is handled, right? And I've seen this on other websites. Have curiosity instead of blame. So, you know, how do we handle failure? How do we handle experimentation and risk taking? Well, we encourage people to learn from mistakes, learn from failures, to share the lessons learned, to share the failures without shame or stigma. And in doing that, you know, within reason, right? Like if someone behaves completely inappropriately or far exceeds, you know, reasonable boundaries or reasonable risks, then obviously there's, you know, conversations to have there. But handling failure in a positive way, removing any stigma or shame around it, that's a massive piece for establishing a new normal about how failure is handled in the family, in the organization. All right, number four, create space for new ideas, even wild ones. So this is about, think about what ideas do we want to listen to? Do we have a completely open brainstorm policy? All right. Now, in a team environment, that can be about solutions to problems with customer service or research and development or innovation or product development or operations. In a family, new ideas could mean, hey, let's try something new around how we spend our time on weekends. Let's try something new about how we do the washing or the dishes or the chores. Let's try something new about whatever. And encourage those sorts of new ideas to come from all quarters, to come from everyone. Everyone has an opportunity to participate and to be a part of generating new ideas, because that's where creativity, that's where innovation, and that's where people's sense of contributing massively get a boost. Number five, embrace productive conflict, right? Conflict, tension, inevitable, right? It's the kind of thing we are always going to come across, but it doesn't have to be a bad thing. It doesn't actually mean anything. It just means that people have different ideas. I've discovered the long and hard way by working side by side with my wife for many, many years in a couple of different businesses that when we have conflict, it usually means one of a couple of things. Either firstly, we've both misunderstood the brief, so we need to go back to communication skills 101 and just go, right, let's get clear on the brief. Second thing it could mean is that we have different viewpoints. We approach problems in a slightly different way. I personally tend to come from a big picture and then drill down to detail. My wife tends to start with the detail and then roll up to the big picture. So when we started working together, we would get into these ridiculous circular arguments. How long is this going to take? I don't know. I need to know exactly what we need to do. Well, I don't know what we need to do. We need to start with the big picture. Backwards and forwards. Ridiculous, right? But we didn't realize that we just have different ways of looking at the world and starting and solving problems. Another reason could just be that we literally have different beliefs about the best way of doing something. But here's what I've discovered, and I believe personally this holds true in family. I believe it holds true in workplaces. I believe it's one of the sort of foundational stones of democracy and how good it is. When we all come together, we can create a better solution collectively than what we would have individually. My wife and I have seen this countless times where we've both brought ourselves, our best selves, to a problem. We've both bounced our ideas around and come up with solutions that actually incorporate the best bits of both of our inputs and, in fact, our whole team's inputs. And that's given us a much better way of managing conflict and a much better outcome when it comes to challenging and solving problems. So there's sort of five steps. As I said, I'll link to this. There's a bunch more stuff in this, but I really believe these things and a coaching culture, right? A culture where people are encouraged to be courageous, are given the skills that they need if they're lacking on how to have hard conversations. Again, refer to previous episodes. And where we invite people to learn in the moment and to adapt in the moment, to be flexible and to be adaptable. We're going to get the best out of ourselves. We're going to get the best out of the people around us, in our family, at work, at home, in community groups, right? This is all really powerful stuff. And all of these things can help us feel safe. There are a couple of other links I'm going to share, but I wanted to sort of preface that part by saying there are tools to reasonably objectively assess how safe do I feel right now. And again, these are largely designed for how safe do I feel in the workplace? Do I feel like I have a voice? Do I feel like my ideas matter? Do I feel like I have the ability to contribute and I'm listened to with respect? All of these sorts of factors are corporate oriented or company or workplace culture oriented, but we can easily interpret these things into a personal and a family context. All right, here's my challenge to you. You knew it was coming. I always wrap up the episodes with challenges for you. What environments are you in? You're probably in a family. You're probably in a work environment. You may be in community group environments, either social clubs or sports clubs or other, you know, places where you serve a slightly bigger purpose than just your own personal needs. Is there a role for you to be a leader and to cultivate a safe environment in those places? Have a think about that. Think about what I've spoken about today. Look at the links and use some of these tools to help you cultivate those things. But before you even go into any of that, point the lens at yourself. How safe do I feel in my life right now? Do I feel safe? Do I feel constantly under threat? Right? Go back into that sort of picture and have a bit of a reflection around, do I feel safe in this area, in this area, in this area? Why not? What are some of the factors at play here? All right. I'll, as I said, put some awesome reflection questions and links and surveys into the show notes. You can have a look through and interpret them for yourself. I definitely also recommend going back to my series of Thrive episodes because all of those things will help absolutely bring you to a feeling of personal, psychological, or emotional safety, right? Good sleep, good food, mindfulness, gratitude, movement, connection, brave conversations. All seven of those, combined with the extras of certainty anchors and mood boosters, commitments and boundaries, they are all designed to help us feel safe and help us thrive, regardless of our external circumstances. I keep banging on about it because it's so powerful. It's such important work. And I'm going to wrap up this episode by telling you how grateful I am that you're here, by thanking you for listening, and by encouraging you that if you want to dig into this some more, I am taking on some more corporate workshops. I think it's a great opportunity to reach large groups of people and to bring this sort of conversation and this work to larger settings. And I think particularly organizations that are up for big things in the world, environmentally, socially, culturally, whatever, need to have these skill sets, need to have these tools so they can operate at their best and bring the best of humanity to bear, right? Bring the light into the dark areas so that we can all shine, so that we can all have a better illuminated life. It's been my delight. I'm Israel Smith. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Illuminating Lives podcast. Please share it around. Please enjoy your week wherever you are, and I will see you next episode. Thanks for joining me for this episode of the Illuminating Lives podcast. Please help me reach more people by sharing this podcast with your loved ones and leaving me a great 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Remember, I work as a 1-to-1 coach and professional speaker, helping dads in business and leadership find more peace, feel less stress, and be the best parent, husband, and leader they can be. If you'd like to work with me or have me present to your organization, please contact me via my website or social media. All the links are in the show notes. Until next time, may you be free, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you be loved, and may you live with ease.